They say it's grabbers only, and that the reason why is because I'm currently at the Grab office in Kuala Lumpur. I'm observing ASEAN with me, Ibrahim Sani, and my colleague Rizal Zulkapli. The reason why I'm at Grab is because I want to understand better what an ASEAN company like Grab does for the region. And most importantly, I'll be discussing this with Grab Malaysia Country Director, Sean Goh, to understand better the prospects of what this region offers for Grab and for people in ASEAN.
I think when we look at regulations overall as a topic, most of the time the spirit of the regulations are very strong. And in this case, in our case in Malaysia, the spirit of the regulations is about quality and safety. And I think that's important to build towards. But when we talk about readiness, one challenge is that regulations tend to be a bit stagnant over time. So take, for example, e-hailing regulations. The starting base for e-hailing regulations is the taxi regulations. And taxi regulations really were created in a different time where you had less access to technology, you had less means to actually innovate for quality and safety. So our biggest suggestion really was building upon that base of the regulations. How do we leverage technology to innovate? Not only to meet the regulations, but to actually set a new bar for ASEAN as well as the whole world. I think to some extent, there is some customization for the country. So for Indonesia, for example, bikes are a very big part of the e-hailing industry. In Malaysia, we're really a lot more focused on cars. Malaysians are very used to cars as the primary mode of transport. The customization that I think it is more important than country-specific customizations is really, really customizing to cater to the digital industry. So one example is, in the past, we used to have full training for a few hours, classroom training basically. Drivers come in, they sit through training, and really we're not sure whether that results in good quality or good behavior or great service. Was something that we've been testing that is only possible in e-hailing today, not in the taxi industry in the past, is digital training. Digital training through the smartphone allows us, first of all, to be a lot more contextually relevant. So we can actually feed training material that is relevant to that specific driver, that specific driver's feedback and patterns. It can be timely, so we can actually give feedback on how to actually greet the customer when the driver first gets a pickup, for example. So the timeliness and the relevance of the content is very critical. I think when we're thinking about a business, well, the way we think about it is not really about a service, it's really about what our consumers want. So if you actually pull back a few years ago, not that long ago, right, say 5 years ago, for our consumers, when they hit a button and a taxi shows up, it's a magical experience, it's very impressive. Just a few years later, people no longer expect the car to show up. They expect the car to show up fast, clean, with good service. And people want to be able to change their destinations. The expectations grow tremendously. What we're seeing now is that the expectations are growing, not just in terms of depth, but also breadth. People want their apps to do more and more for them. And a lot of studies have shown that most people only have 5 apps that they interact with. So if that app is going to be on my front page, I expect it to do everything. So essentially, when we're talking about innovating or we're talking about creating new services, building towards that super app vision, what we're really trying to do is follow the consumer. Yeah, I mean, the business and the space that we operate in is the online to offline space. Essentially, what we're trying to do is bring a lot more services that are offline to an online channel, and basically through that create a lot more access for a lot more people. And when we have a business like that, whether it's ride hailing or it's food delivery or logistics, it's very important to manage sometimes even up to 3 stakeholders. So take food delivery, for example. We have the consumer, we have the delivery partner, which in our ride hailing world is the driver. And then now we have merchants as well. It's more and more important to, I think about this setup as almost like a mini economy. And there are lots of implications to that. When we think about our setup as an economy, it's very important to think about price, for example, not just as a manufacturer, because in this case, there's no manufacturer. There is an end consumer, but it's a three-sided marketplace. So when we think about price, it's no longer about charging the maximum price that we can, or charging the lowest price so that we get the most consumers. We have to make sure that we serve both sides well. Absolutely. If you think about ASEAN, what's really interesting about ASEAN as a region, we have more than 500 million people here, and yet it's really a diverse setup, basically 10 different countries. Each country is totally different. But if you look closely, you can actually pick out some trends that actually cut across all 10. There's a growing middle class. These emerging consumers actually have a tremendously fast-growing pace of needs, right? They actually want access to a lot more services than before, a lot more mobility than before. And smartphone penetration is higher than ever in Southeast Asia. People are basically leapfrogging the era of desktop and straight to having a smartphone. So I think all the ingredients are really in place. Of course, one challenge is when you have 10 different economies to manage, the regulatory landscape will also be different. Consumer preferences will be a little bit different. And in a way, that's Grab's strength. We actually have a very local first approach. We hire people who are from the market that we're serving, who thoroughly understand that market. Even within Malaysia, if you think about Malaysia, for someone like me to claim to understand Malaysia, it's not true. We're operating in 27 cities. So we have people who are from those cities actually feedback to us what the preferences are on the ground. And so given that mix of rising middle class, high penetration of mobile, and as well as a localized approach, we think that we actually have the ingredient to create a very strong marketplace for ASEAN. I think there's some truth in that. Of course, China and the US are very established tech ecosystems. So we do expect to see a lot of unicorns come up from there. What's really unique about ASEAN is if you think about our counterparts in the US, it's a very sort of vertical or service-oriented space where our ride-hailing apps tend to really focus on transport as a service. In Southeast Asia, people seem to be a lot more open to having their everyday needs served by a tech platform. And it could be a result of people basically just having entered into the digital space and being a lot more open to various services being on the platform. Whereas in the US, I think that growth has happened over time. So people rely on certain platforms for certain services. For example, for e-commerce, they would rely on Amazon. For transport, they would rely on Uber. Whereas in Southeast Asia, it's such a new landscape that a company that actually comes into the picture and is able to serve multiple needs will be able to serve the customers well. So I think in that sense, you'll see a lot more unicorns come up based on leveraging their strength across different businesses. We're actually seeing a landscape where there's a lot of funding out there. And the investors are really looking for companies or businesses that are able to serve these needs well. Because ultimately, if you look at the ride-hailing business, for example, there's no strong loyalty towards a brand just because it's been in place longer. The loyalty is, we believe, is towards the customer service. So if a brand can show that it's able to serve customers well, we believe that funding will also come. Yeah, so we actually see loyalty as two layers almost. The first layer is we need to be able to serve you well when it comes to your basic needs. So I'll give you an example, right? Imagine we gave you, the second layer really is about the sweetener, right? Really creating delight. Imagine we gave you points and lots of benefits, but we don't even get you a car on time when you call for one. So that's not going to work out. What we're trying to do is go for both layers. Hopefully we serve your needs well, and then on top of that, put in sweeteners so that people relate to our brand better, so that people feel that they're getting more value. Yeah, if we look at our own business, I think that ASEAN can work, but it is hard work to make it work. Ultimately, we are talking about very different countries. Although a lot of them are going through similar problems, and there's a lot of room to share. So if you look at our own business, our various countries do well because number one, they take a hyper-local approach. And number two, we quite proactively share the learnings across our countries. So maybe that's something that ASEAN, our ASEAN nations can also practice. First of all, of course, looking inwards and taking a local approach, but being a lot more open in sharing that growth across.
That was my conversation with Sean Goh of Grab Malaysia. If you want more interviews like this, just head on to astroawan.com/observingASEAN. Also, we have plenty of other shows on offer at our news channel. Just head on to Astro Awani, find the show page, and you're going to have a plethora of information there. Remember, you can watch us on our mobile phone app as well. Just download Astro Awani on Google Play or Apple App Store. That's it from me for this week. Until next time.